Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing? This is Electronic Editions, home of Electronic News Network. Hopefully you guys are having a great day today. It is March the 7th, almost 9 a.m. this morning. We are coming into you guys live. We're going to be taking news from our LinkedIn page today. All right, but before, without further ado, before moving forward, please give us a like and subscribe. It really helps our channel out. Know that we're definitely doing a good job providing the best tech information to you guys on a daily basis. Tech news, tech updates, privacy updates, software updates, and tech deals. All right, guys. Also, guys, please follow us on our podcast channel. Our podcast channel is growing really rapidly right now. It's called Electronic News Network as well. You can check us out at Spotify as well as Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts as well, guys. All right. Without further ado, guys, let's get started. We will also be leaving our social media links below in the description. So if you want to follow us on other social media channels to get updated on certain news, you can please go ahead, click on the links in the description. You can follow us there too. All right. So without further ado, let's get started for today, guys. All right. So we got the best free password manager, right? So for you guys that creating multiple accounts, have multiple email addresses, or you have lots of different information that you have on other websites, right? You have other passwords, lots of passwords to accounts, right? So using a password manager is one of the best steps you can take to protect your security online. A good password manager makes it easy to generate unique, strong passwords, and it will then securely save them so they're available wherever you need them. Whether it's on your phone, your laptop, tablet, desktop, computer, wherever, right? So basically, they take 90% of the work out of being safe online, right? So this is going to be great for you guys, right? It's going to be great for everyone, right? As we're in the digital realm, a lot of things are online. You have to sign up to a lot of services online. Maybe you have passwords you use for work. Having a good password manager application or a safe place to put your passwords is very, very important, guys. It's also good not to use the same password for lots of different websites that you're using, so it reduces the likability for you to get hacked by another outside force, right? So let's go click into this article. Let's see what is the best password manager that you guys can use for free, so it's not going to cost you a cent, so you can easily store your passwords here. Or also too, you may have other ways that you're storing your password, right? Maybe you're writing it down on a notepad. That's a very secret diary that you hold somewhere safe, right? Or you can also use this one, right? So hopefully at this point everyone knows why it's important to use a unique password for all of your accounts online. But the short version is that using one password everywhere means that if just one site you use gets hacked, an attacker potentially has the password that unlocks your entire online life, right? So that's going to be a terrible thing, right? So breaches still matter if you use a password manager, but at that point, it's a case of resetting just one password rather than dozens. Although different password managers have different selling points, most offer the same core set of features. They generate passwords which they securely store, and they'll prompt you to save passwords when you use them on websites, right? So they'll also sync your passwords across devices and autofill them into websites and apps when required, right? So it's best, again, guys, to have that safe, secure, place where you can place your passwords, right? And saving it on your browser, it's okay. Obviously, that's why it's also great to have your computer protected. So browser protection, your computer is protected. Personally, I use the Vast, which is a great security system. Some other people use Norton. There's other security systems out there. They're very great with securing your information like that too, right? So there are many good password managers available that change, that charge a monthly fee. But for this guide, we're going to be focusing on free services. All of them have paid subscription tiers, but for the most part, they are free to offer, right? They offer the essential core features of a password manager. Right. So the best for most people is Bitwarden, right? So Bitwarden, it looks like it's absolutely free too. So Bitwarden has basically everything you could want out of a password manager, guys. And for you guys that are listening to podcast two, if you don't know how to spell Bitwarden, it's Bitwarden. Okay, so it's available across iOS and Android. It has native desktop applications on Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, and also it integrates with every major browser, including Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and Edge. So Bitwarden security also has been audited by the third-party security company, and although it uses the cloud to sync your passwords between devices, it says it stores them in an encrypted form that only you can unlock, and you also have the option of protecting your Bitwarden account with two-factor authentication to provide an extra layer of security, which is very important, guys. Stepping aside from this, going into two-step authentication, guys, two-factor authentication, it's very important that you use this feature for a lot of the different accounts that you open online. It really adds that extra layer of security. So even if somebody were to compromise your password, they need that two-factor authentication, and they obviously are not going to have that, right? You are the only one who has access to that application. There's Google, two-step authentication. There's also other brands that do that as well too. You download it, and it's a unique six-digit code, and that is really, really hard to hack too. So definitely. That's something to keep in mind. Moreover, guys, importing our passwords was easy, and Bitwarden has guides for many popular password managers to its support pages. It supports biometric security on iOS and Android, and all of its software, it's nicely designed and easy to use, right? So Bitwarden does have paid tiers, but we think most people will be able to do without most of the features they offer. Paying gets you access to encrypted file attachments, more second factor security options, and reports on the overall security of the passwords you have in use. But even on the free tier, you can perform checks to see if individual passwords have been leaked in a password breach. Paying also gets you access to built-in one-time code generator for two-factor authentication, but it's easy and arguably more secure to use a separate app for this time. Right, so very, very cool. As you guys can see, this article is from TheVerge.com, and The Verge score is a 9 out of 10. The good stuff is well-designed apps and browser extensions, third-party security audit as well. Kind of the cons for this that they said was no bulk exposed password report with free tier. The desktop prompt to save passwords is a little bit small, right? So Bitwarden, a great, great password manager. We also have another one called the Runner Up. As you know, according to this article, as part of our research, we also tried a variety of other password managers. Of these, Zoho Vault is another feature pack free option, but its interface isn't as good as Bitwarden's, right? So it looks like Zoho Vault is the other password manager, right? So for you guys who don't know, I spell Zoho, it's Zoho, and then Vault, Vault. So Zoho Vault iOS and Android apps are very nice enough, and its browser extension is a little clunky and buries useful features like a password generator behind one too many sub-menus. It also is unclear if the software has gone through a third-party security audit. The company didn't respond to our query at the time for publication, right? So it looks like Verge, they also scored this a 7.5 out of 10, a little bit less than Bitwarden's, but still pretty good. Good stuff about this. It says that it's cleanly designed apps. It also reports on strength of passwords as well, right? So it looks like the cons about this as well too is that it's clunky browser extension and no native desktop applications as well. All right, so if you guys want to learn more too about these applications too, guys, please guys go ahead, follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you guys can learn more about it there too. All right, guys. So it looks like the Biden administration, getting into the cryptocurrency space, right? So how the Biden administration is approaching crypto regulations. Looks like they're trying to regulate it. What could this mean for the crypto community? What could this mean for the crypto market, right? If you guys don't know cryptocurrency, very popular cryptocurrency right now is Bitcoin, as well as maybe if you guys have heard, his second best currency is Ethereum as well. So how would the Biden administration approach these crypto regulations, right? So it's hard to imagine a worse scenario than the one left behind by former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. The draconian regulatory proposals were Mnuchin's own personal vendetta, according to Bitcoin veterans like Square crypto developer Matt Curiello and Coin Center director Jerry Brito. And it's too soon to say whether incoming Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen will approve the proposed Know Your Customer standards or reject them. So it looks like they're trying to get a propose a KYC, right, of some form, for you guys, for you crypto experts that know what that means, right? KYC is just know your customers, pretty much just a an approval process, right? So given the chaos created by the Trump administration, Bitcoin fans are anxiously optimistic about regulators, right, and will approach the cryptocurrency space during President Joe Biden's administration. Mnuchin, at the very end, had an alarmist view about the illicit use of cryptocurrency that wasn't shared by a law enforcement and intelligence agencies. It doesn't seem that Janet Yellen has the same view, Brito said, right? So her view seems to be very standard. So namely, Yellen believes that there are both positive and negative ways to use cryptocurrency. She also expressed a desire to strengthen regulations that prevent illicit usage like terror financing, right? So she may set the tone for government bodies like the Office of the Comptroller of the currency, right? So the Comptroller of the Currency, right? So the OCC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, and the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, so the CFTC, right? So the SEC, the OCC, and the CFTC are choosing people that are very crypto knowledgeable, Brito added. That could tell you that they're getting deep knowledge to regulate it heavily, or more likely, it's now seen as an important part of the economy and finance. So although it's still early in the transition, it appears the Biden administration will nominate former Ripple advisor and former U.S. Treasury Department official Michael Barr to head the OCC. In short term, the Trump's SEC appointee, Commissioner Hester Pierce, will continue her notoriously crypto-friendly approach to the securities market. But the Biden administration is reportedly considering former CFTC Chairman Gary Gensler to soon lead the SEC. The new SEC Chairman, Gary Gensler, has been pretty outspoken with his views on Facebook Project Libra, which is Facebook's Project Libra cryptocurrency, right? As well as Ripple. It's opinion that those are securities and should be regulated by the SEC, right? So that's very interesting to see, right? And this is said by attorney Haley Lennon, a crypto-focused partner at Anderson Kill Law Firm. In the next year or two, I hope some of the litigation we are seeing and new leadership in the SEC will result in greater clarity so that down the road there are less enforcement options, right? Or less enforcement actions. Clarity will help companies to know what to avoid. Meanwhile, Reuters reported the White House is expected to nominate Georgetown University professor Chris Brummer to lead the CFTC. Brummer was previously President Obama's pick, but never got confirmed by the Senate due to political gridlocks. It's still unclear who will be nominated in 2021 for key roles related to curbing terror financing, such as the Office of Foreign Assets Control and the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN. Right, I think we might start seeing more regulation coming from FinCEN and OFAC. There have been some settlements with crypto companies, and OFAC has been adding wallet addresses to the SDN sanctions list. Even if we see more positive things coming from the OCC, SEC, and CFTC, it will be balanced a bit with more regulations related to know your customer and anti-money laundering, more general supervision of the source of funds, and sanctions screening. Sanctions are the hot topic of 2021. Throughout 2020, the Iranian government published statements indicating it intends to use cryptocurrency, including Bitcoin, but not limited to it, to circumnavigate bank sanctions. Emerges from Iran and other countries have used Bitcoin to do exactly this, right? So far, the Biden administration hasn't offered any indication it might lift sanctions. To the contrary, on February 18th, the Treasury published a statement that the payment processor BitPay was penalized for allowing users to transact with citizens in sanctioned jurisdictions such as Iran, Cuba, and Ukraine. Regulators' approach to cryptocurrency, which many Iranian Americans also use both internationally and domestically, will reflect whether the White House prefers a hawkish or dovish approach to the diplomacy in the Middle East, right? So that is very, very amazing news, guys, right? So Brito also, you know, Brito says he especially is curious to see new appointees for OFAC and FinCEN, since they'll be Yellen's right and left hand in her approach to sanctions and regulations. He agreed with Lenin and Boring. All of them believe new legal norms are in the pipeline. However stringent or pro-business the coming verdicts may be, at least Biden has yet to rage tweet about hating Bitcoin the way Trump did, right? So it's still the period where everyone is getting their sea legs and trying to understand what their priorities are. Brito said that the Biden administration, once they start either putting forth policy or reacting to the things that happen, that's when we'll really know where they stand. So pretty much, guys, this is looking very interesting with the Biden administration looking to appoint new appointees under OFAC and FinCEN, under these regulators, trying to obviously make sure that that there are more appropriate regulations within the crypto market, right? So obviously, you know, if we as a country cannot do business with certain countries, you know, it looks like these appointees would help, you know, solve, you know, mitigate that and make sure that won't happen, right? As we can see, BitPay did get fined for doing that. So, you know, they weren't supposed to do business with certain countries and they probably didn't even know themselves, but hey, you know, honestly, guys, this is very interesting. In a more broader scope, does it mean that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency is going to be vanished? It's going to be regulated? It's going to be controlled? That is absolutely not the case. Bitcoin and blockchain itself, it's a decentralized peer-to-peer network system, and it cannot be controlled by the government. This is why the government is very, you can say, you know, definitely interested, scared in a way, but also trying to put in regulations, right? They're putting in, and what they're doing is they're filling these old institutional, as you can say, you know, not companies, but enforcers such as the SEC, such as, you know, FinTech and so forth, right? But they're filling these actual, you know, appointees as crypto friendly. So these people have deep knowledge of the crypto market, so they can implement certain regulations to make sure things are running smoothly. Now, you know, is Bitcoin going to be banished or they're going to take that away? Absolutely not. But you know, the government and the Biden administration is working to, you know, approach crypto regulations appropriately, right? So if you guys want to learn more about this too, guys, go ahead. Please follow us on LinkedIn. Click into the article. You guys can learn more about it there too. All right. So moreover, guys, we got news on Apple. So four iPhone 14 links you need to know, even though it isn't coming until 2022. Very interesting. iPhone 14, guys, and these are leaks. So the iPhone 13 hasn't even come out yet, right? So the iPhone 12 range was released in late 2020. So the next Apple iPhones we're looking forward to are the iPhone 13 headsets, but all the rumors suggest a lot of small improvements. That means we might have to wait until Apple's 2022 phones, right? The supposed iPhone 14 range for the big changes that could bring iPhone into the future. Some of the big changes are advances that might be coming, but not in time for the iPhone 13. Ergo, we expect things like finally losing the notch to happen to the iPhone 14, in which case we'd expect a punch hole to house the selfie camera, but it's always possible Apple puts in under the display, which would make sense given its FaceTime, ID enabling sensors, right? So what are the four leaks, right? So many of you guys are saying, okay, what are the four leaks, right? So let's go ahead and click into the article and read more about this amazing, interesting information. So let's see. Right, so it looks like the iPhone 14 is ditching the notch. So one rumor suggests that the iPhone 14 will finally ditch the notch, and given it comes with from noted Apple analyst Ming-Chi Koo, we'd give it more consideration than other predictions this far out. Other Android phones lost their notches years ago, but Apple has kept the notch to hide the front-facing cameras, dot projector, infrared camera, and flood emulator, right, that enables Face ID. But the rumor notes that the iPhone 14 may ditch the notch and just have a punch hole for the selfie camera, though it's unclear where those sensors would go, right? It's possible the sensors would get a smaller notch, or they'd be minimized, perhaps combined into fewer units and placed along the selfie camera for an elongated punch hole. Very, very interesting, guys. Or Apple could just leap ahead of most Android phones and hide its sensors under the display, like the ZTE Axon 25G. We'll have to see how Apple rearranges its sensors or replaces them with the photo dedicated sensors entirely. But ultimately, everyone will like seeing the punch hole go, right? So it looks like they're going to ditch the punch hole. Next, the iPhone 14 glasses. As you can see, it looks like there's a phone here, and also looks like these are AR type glasses, right? So this one's a bit more pie in the sky, but one patent suggests that the much rumored Apple glasses will simply be frame holders to slip an iPhone into, a la Google, and Google cardboard, right? And given we haven't heard about the iPhone 13 working this way, the iPhone 14 could be the Apple device that enables this functionality, right? So of course, we haven't heard much else about Apple glasses that use an iPhone's display in place of bespoke binocular lenses. Recent rumors point to a private, primarily VR headset coming in 2022 that precedes a primarily AR unit following in 2023. Just like I said, it looks like very VR AR type glasses, right? But we'll wait and see if Apple ends up offering a cheaper device that slots in an iPhone, right? So it looks like you can slot in the iPhone with these glasses too, which would be very, very cool. Right, so and also it looks like the iPhone 14 MagSafe main charger is the next rumored. So the iPhone 12 debuted MagSafe system, which allowed wireless charging through chargers magnetically clamping to the back of the phones. But the MagSafe moniker was first used in the MacBook laptops as a type of breakaway charger, and according to another patent, this concept could be used for future Apple phones, potentially the iPhone 14, right? So as such, the charger would operate like the MacBook's MagSafe charger did, magnetically clipping the bottom of the iPhone 14 away easily, right? That means the iPhone 14 should implement this charging method would finally lose the lighting cable, which has been a fixture of Apple's phone since the iPhone 5, right? So it would be the right time at long last to ditch the mainstay charging solution for Apple's phones for a faster charging cable. Though it would sure be a curveball if the iPhones didn't switch to the USB-C, right? So 2022's iPhone range becoming all 5G. Looks like this is the next feature here too. The same core rumor suggests that every phone in Apple's lineup is going to get 5G by 2022. And that really kind of makes sense, right? When you look at 5G, guys, 5G is becoming more and more popular now. It's still kind of really new, but 5G is definitely it's in the works, it's been in the works, and it's continuing to be in the works. Even by 2022, lots of phones will probably switch from that LTE 4G to 5G as well, right? So the iPhone 12 range established 5G in all Apple flagship phones, leaving the lower cost handsets to get upgraded to the next gen connectivity by then. That just leaves a likely 5G refresh of the iPhone SE in early 2020, and whatever replaces the iPhone 11, it's possible that the standard iPhone 12 or iPhone 13 will simply take its place, and it's always possible there'll be another iPhone 14 model that fills this gap, right? So what else do we expect from the iPhone 14, right? So given we still don't know how much the iPhone 13 range will cost, we'll be relying on similar speculation for the iPhone 14 prices. We'll mainly use the price tags the iPhone 12 to guide our estimates. The least expensive iPhone 14 mini may be the most affordable model and could start at $700, right? The price tag for the iPhone 12 mini. Similarly, the standard iPhone 14 may cost $800, right? And this is mere speculation, right? So the iPhone 14 Pro price could start at $1,000, which is where the iPhone 12 Pro cost starts as well. The iPhone 14 Pro Max might then begin at $1,100, right? So again, these prices are merely speculation, guys. Naturally, these expected prices could all change if Apple finds a reason to charge more. They're roughly in line with the iPhone 11 predecessors, but there could be new must-have features that justify a price hike as well. The iPhone 14 release date is also a mystery. Apple tends to launch its iPhones in Q3, and we'd expect the phones to be officially revealed in September 2022, before hitting the market in October 2022. But the given pandemic's delays to iPhone 12 releases in 2020, there's a bit of uncertainty regarding whether Apple could diverge from predecessor and launch the phones on a different schedule, right? So iPhone 14 versus iPhone 13s versus iPhone 13, what will the future iPhone be called, right? So this is other information as well too. If you guys want to learn more about this, more iPhone 13, iPhone 14 information too. Please, guys, follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you can learn more about this here too, guys. But this is very, very cool information, especially the fact that Apple, is in the works with these Apple glasses with VR and AR technology. Very, very cool. And the fact that, hey, I believe even iPhone 13 may roll out with the 5G version before iPhone 14, obviously, as well. So this is very, very interesting. If you have any, comments as well too, please, guys, leave comments in the description. We'll be happy to talk about it even further. All right, so moreover, guys, we also have Ford. So the Ford car company recalls some of its first Mustang March E SUVs due to loose bolts, right? Unfortunately. So Ford is recalling dozens of the first Mustang Mach-E deliveries after it discovered loose bolts during the quality checks that are holding up shipments, right? So some vehicles may have subframe bolts that the supplier did not tighten to specification, Ford wrote Friday afternoon. While the issue affected While the issue in affected vehicles is not to Ford's standards, the company is not aware of any accidents or injuries related to this condition. Ford says about 1,200 Mustang Mach-Es are affected in the U.S., as well as 90 in Canada, but that the overwhelming majority of those have not been shipped to customers yet, which is pretty good, right? So fewer than 75 customers have already taken delivery, will have to bring their Mustang Mach-E in to get fixed, right? According to the company, Ford says it will start contacting these owners beginning on March 22nd. So yeah, guys, if you're listening to this and you have a Ford Mustang Mach-E and it is giving you issues, you know, and stuff like that, please, guys, go ahead, contact Ford and, you know, bring in your new Ford to get it fixed. Okay. And it's pretty much probably should be fixed free of cost, especially if you're shelling out all this tons of money to pay for a beautiful cost like this. But again, I don't know. We don't know as a company as well. So go ahead. You guys would have to talk to Ford on that one, but definitely talk to them. They'll probably, you know, they'll definitely find out a situation for you there too. If you guys want to learn more about this too, more about Ford recalls on this first Mustang Mach-E SUVs, please go ahead, follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you guys can learn more there too. Moreover, guys, more on kind of, you know, I would say software update and being able to navigate through your computer, right? So how to run a battery life report on your Windows laptop, which can be pretty important, especially if you think it's giving you trouble or if you're just trying to run a diagnostic on your computer. So Windows has been keeping track of how your laptop's battery is doing since it was installed. The report, which you can run using just two command prompt commands, will show how many cycles you've used on your battery and how it's been used in the past 3 days. It will also give you a picture of what Windows estimates your battery life should be versus what it actually is. So if you're curious about your battery life status, or you've been noticing that your battery life has been a bit of a drag lately and are wondering if it's due to neglect of some power virus of your computer sucking back a bunch of juice, this report should let you know. So let's go ahead, click into the article, and let's give you guys a rundown of what you should do on how to run your battery life on your computer. Right. So first, guys, you want to open the command prompt tool. To do that, you can search CMD from the start menu, right, and click on command prompt to open it. Then the report will split out as HTML file. So we'll want to make sure that it's easy to find. To do that, type in, literally just type in CD, percentage sign. It's going to be all one word, guys, right? So CD space percentage sign. This is home path, should be in all caps, percentage sign, and then capital D for desktop, right? And just spell desktop, so DESKTOP. And this command simply navigates your current directory to your desktop. So when you generate the report, you could find it there as well too. To generate the report, type in literally power CFG. So this is going to be in lowercase slash battery report. This also, battery report is one word in lowercase as well. This runs the power coding tool and tells it to slip out a battery report, which should now be sitting on your desktop as an HTML file, right? So double click the file to open it up in your browser, or it may ask you which program you want to open the file in, which would be your browser, obviously. Now you can see all of the sweet, sweet battery information, guys. And guys, if you're really still having trouble to navigate this as well too, please, guys, go ahead, follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you can learn more. If you guys are listening through podcast form too, guys, go ahead, click on episode, I believe this is episode 38, and you'll be able to see exactly what I'm talking about as well too. All right, guys, moreover, more social issues. We are a tech update channel. We are a tech channel, but we do understand that social issues are important as well too. It looks like Facebook reportedly under probe for systemic racial bias in hiring and promotions. So the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission is looking into allegations of racial bias and hiring practices at Facebook, a probe which the agency has designated as systemic, Reuters reported, right? So in July, Facebook employee Oscar Vinicius Jr., who is black, filed a complaint with EEOC along with two people, Venice recruited by whom Facebook did not hire. The complaint alleges that the social platform discriminates against black job applicants and employees and promotes racial stereotype. Vinicius told NPR that Facebook has a black people problem and that the company has failed to create a culture to attract and retain black workers, right? So unfortunately, this seems to be the case, according to this person, and according to Oscar, right? And this is really unfortunately still happening in our society as well too. And even at the biggest tech companies like Facebook, they definitely do need to step up and work on this, right? Especially as we're moving forward, in our society, into the digital realm, what things are happening socially and politically, this just is unacceptable, right? So I'm glad that this person was able to come out and speak to this truth, that this company was actually doing things like this as well and bringing this to light. And definitely, hopefully Facebook can make some positive reinforcements, positive move forward into creating a better minority culture, better black culture, and a better culture of other minorities in the company as well too, right? Not just posting that they say they're all about Black Lives Matter, but actually acting like Black Lives Matter and doing things that actually show that and actually that actually put it into action, right? So I'm glad that this was able to come to light, and hopefully Facebook will be making some changes, right? So if you want to learn more about this too, guys, go ahead. Please, guys, follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you guys can learn more about it there too. Moreover, guys, this may be exciting news for a lot of you guys. It looks like California gives okay for Disneyland and other theme parks to reopen April 1st with restrictions, right? So Disneyland, Universal Studios, other theme parks, and sports stadiums in California can reopen beginning April 1st. The California Department of Public Health said Friday, right? So, but there are caveats. The health department is requiring significantly reduced capacity, mandatory masking, and other public health precautions due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. How many people will be allowed in the parks depends on the number of COVID-19 cases in the counties where they're located. For amusement parks, counties in the red tier of California's four-tier reopening risk system, red is the second highest risk category, will be limited to the attendance of 15% capacity, right? In the orange tier, the limit increases to 25% capacity, and the yellow tier to 35% capacity. Attendance will be restricted to in-state visitors as well. Disneyland is in Orange County, which is currently the highest risk purple tier, but local news reports suggest that it may soon move down to the red tier, right? So it looks like, California gives Disneyland parks an okay to reopen April 1st, guys. Hopefully it is not an April 1st fool's joke where they reopen and they're saying that, whoa, sorry guys, we're not open anymore, or only 10 people can be allowed in the park at a time. Hopefully they don't pull something like that, but honestly, if California is giving the okay, that is definitely amazing, guys. So if you want to learn more about this information too, please, guys, follow us on LinkedIn at Electronic Editions. Click into the article and you guys can learn more about it there too. All right. So it looks like there are other, there are, other gaming developments too in the action. It looks like Watch Dogs Legion's online mode is indefinitely delayed on PC. So Watch Dogs Legion new online mode for PC players has been delayed indefinitely, whilst the Tactical Ops mode has been pushed back to March 23rd for Xbox, PlayStation, and Stadia 2. And according to them, they said, "We've identified an issue in the PC version that can cause the game to crash for players with certain GPUs," developer Ubisoft said in a tweet. "The team is working on fixing the issue as quickly as possible, and in the meantime, we've made the decision to wait to launch the PC version until this is fixed." Right, so that's pretty good. "We will communicate the new launch date as soon as possible, and we'll also keep you guys updated as possible as soon as possible as well too." So if you guys want to learn more about this information too, please guys follow us on LinkedIn, click into the article, and you guys can learn more about it there too, guys. All right, so we are going to stop right there, guys, in terms of news. If you guys want to check out more news updates on our channel, especially on our LinkedIn page, please guys go ahead, click in the link in the description below. Follow us on LinkedIn, at Electronic Editions, as well as other social media channels as well too. Don't forget, click that like and subscribe button below. It really helps our channel out and helps it, circulate around YouTube so more and more people can become aware of news and privacy updates, software updates, important information in the tech world and beyond, guys. And if you guys haven't already, please visit our website, electronic.net. That's electronic.net. And we will see you guys soon in the next one. And stay clean, guys. Wash your hands. Have a great day. And this week is going to be a great week.